Yeah, we're ready to roll. Hi, Maria. Okay, I'll be leading today. As Crown said, Derek won't be with us. He's at a conference. So we can start with introductions, and I'll just go around the room and ask folks. I'm Richard, Council Co-Chair and Community Engagement Chair. Maria.
Hello, Maria Lacayo, and I'm with HIV Health Services.
Maria Lee.
Lee Jewell, Council Member.
Hi, Lee. David.
David Gonzalez, Council Member.
Hi, David. Stephen.
Stephen Spano, a member of the public, the HCAP staff attorney at the AIDS Legal Referral Panel.
Hi, Stephen. Kira.
Hi, everyone. Kira, Council Staff.
Hi, Kira. And Crown.
Hey, everybody. Crown, Council Staff.
Okay, thank you, everyone. So welcome. If we could put up today's agenda, and we could take a look at that and vote on that by consensus, see what's going on. We need to change anything.
All right, here it is. There is one change that I would like to put forward. It's just that the trans needs assessment recommendation get moved to the end of the meeting, right before number 9. Just because Mark will hopefully be able to join us towards the end, and he wants to talk a little bit about this.
Sure. Everyone okay with that? Yeah, so we'll do that, Kira. Thank you. That'll go at after needs assessment, right?
Correct.
Okay, thank you. Everything else look good? Okay, by consensus, we can approve that. How about April 5th minutes? We could pop those up there. Okay. Anyone like to add anything or subtract? Looks good. Thank you, Kira. Thanks, everyone. So that's approved by consensus. Do we have any announcements?
I have a quick announcement.
Oh, yeah, me, Kira.
Announcement slash reminder, just for anyone that was at the in-person full council meeting or joined us virtually, to please fill out that survey. Just so we can go ahead and have as many survey responses as we can.
What, that meeting that was run excellently by Richard Sullivan?
Of course.
Oh, okay.
If you want to express, obviously, your critiques, but of course, praises for Richard.
Thank you, everyone. So do we have any public comment? Okay. We're moving right along. Stephen, it looks like you're up with the HCAP report, please.
Excellent. Thank you, Richard. Thank you, everybody. So as usual, I'll kind of illustrate some of the cases that I thought are, you know, useful to highlight. And then I'm happy to answer any questions about the report. I know that it kind of came a little bit later. So the first one I'll highlight is on page 1 of the report regarding attendant care. I wanted to highlight this because I think it perfectly illustrates the scope of HCAP services and kind of the continuity of how I try to operate. This is an instance where a client who is a quadriplegic and a resident at a skilled nursing facility was reporting quality of care issues. Some of them were, you know, quite concerning, including bed sores and isolation. So, one, there were significant barriers to supporting this client, including how to communicate. The only way to actually work with them was because they didn't have a phone. And one of the care concerns that they had was that folks at the facility were not supporting in helping them connect with other people. And so connecting with the client's family was a challenge. In addition, connecting with the family and the client together was a challenge. And so to get appropriate paperwork and releases signed, it was quite a process. So we did finally facilitate it. They do have a weekly meeting. And so I was able to attend their like weekly virtual Zoom where it was the brothers and the client that were speaking. And during that time, we kind of came up with all the information that I needed to help file a grievance. And I filed the internal grievance on the client's behalf. At which point the facility referred that to the city attorney's office. So at that point, it kind of, you know, once I go through an internal grievance process, right? The point of HCAP being to use the least adversarial method of dispute resolution. Once we reach a point where it's attorney to attorney dealing with one another, and you know, I receive notification from the city attorney office to only speak directly with them. Once an attorney, by the ethical rules governing attorneys and members of the bar in California, once an attorney knows that a client is represented by an attorney, it is unlawful to connect directly with the client on that matter. And so once that barrier is put up, right, it automatically becomes a far more adversarial process than what HCAP is, you know, designed to support. So at that point, I was kind of required to support in an alternative way, which included referring them to an outside legal service organization that could support in dealing with the attorney's office and or filing whatever other complaints. You know, a move like that is pretty evident that the grievance process is going to go nowhere. Because the, you know, in that instance, the service provider indicated that they were not interested in informal discussions or mediation. They were just going to have their attorney deal with it. And so I thought it might be helpful. Sometimes HCAP can appear to be like, what is it that you do? What are the limits of what you do? This is a prime example of, you know, where my support can begin and unfortunately has to end. If I were not at HCAP, I might take it further, but. The next instance I wanted to kind of chat with was on page 2. This is 2023-02. This is an instance where, and I wanted to illustrate this because I think that we're going to come up against this you know, more and more as service providers move on to different service providers, other areas, and or retirement. This is an instance where a client had a very trustful relationship with their psychosocial supports provider, but that person moved on to a different organization and was no longer able to provide those services. And so kind of moving that person who had this longstanding relationship with that particular service, that particular person, or that I'll just call them a case manager, even though I know that is a confusing term, but the case manager, their contact at that service provider, they had a longstanding relationship with, it was going to be very difficult to build a new relationship with somebody new. And so we have hit some barriers with that regard, you know, in that regard. And, you know, one of the kind of things that I'm trying to do is support both the service provider and the client in developing that relationship and trying to help them build a trustful relationship. You know, it's a tricky situation because I don't want to step on a service provider's toes, and I know that they are experts in what they do. At the same time, sometimes having an additional support there to help kind of guide, you know, and I'm somewhat familiar with the client's disabilities and behaviors. And so it's the type of thing that I can just kind of provide some extra love, a little bit of a warmer handoff to a client in an otherwise, you know, kind of stabbing in the dark type situation. And so I'm attempting to do that. The service provider has indicated a willingness to cooperate to keep the client connected, even if it involves, you know, kind of changing around the caseload a little bit. I wanted to finally kind of chat. Actually, this is an important issue for me, and I wanted to, I mean, they're all important issues, but I thought this one was important for everybody to see. On page 4, 2023-20, this is an individual who is deaf. I have had this issue with this client before, and I think I finally drilled down exactly where the disconnect is. The client often reaches out to me last minute at a time when it's very difficult for me to do anything, but the complaint is always more or less the same. That is that his requests for an in-person interpreter are not timely managed. There's a couple of things. First, the client has been deaf his whole life, and he's familiar with the interpreters in the city. This is a common thing for a lot of people, especially gay men who are long-term survivors in San Francisco. It's a very small community of people, a very close-knit community. It's actually larger than you'd think, but they all know each other, and they've known each other for a long time. And so talking about sensitive issues with some of these folks and medical issues is sometimes a concern for some of the folks that I have who are deaf and you know, primarily ASL speaking. And so he has one interpreter agency that he prefers to use. And that agency requires about a week's notice to identify and schedule an interpreter. Now, the client's indicated for regular appointments where it's just checkups and stuff like that, he's fine using virtual interpretation. And that seems to go off relatively, without a hitch. But for new medical issues or specialist appointments, he really does want an in-person interpreter. And I can understand that. That seems reasonable to me. And so, but what happens is the request comes from the service provider to have the interpreter present for those medical appointments only a day beforehand sometimes. And so my work has typically been to try and figure out exactly where is this happening? Why can we not just, change, can't we make these requests 1 week in advance? Well, the clinic itself does make the request at the time of the appointment is made, but then it gets sent to another department within the service provider's offices that is the interpreting department, the interpreter services department. And the interpreter services department is used to appointments changing constantly, appointments being canceled. And so their policy is that they don't send it out until the day or two before the appointment. And so right now we're at a place where we've identified exactly what the problem is. And now we have to try and figure out some workable solution so that this client can feel confident. The thing is, there haven't been any appointments missed by the interpreting service, which would give, from a legal perspective, we get some argument that there needs to be some sort of accommodation. Really what it does is just stresses the client out to no end, right? Because he's wondering, am I going to be able to understand what's even happening at this appointment because I don't have an interpreter? And I think that's a legitimate, concern, right? I mean, it's something that all of us might take for granted sometimes, going into a doctor's appointment is not an additional thing that we have to worry about. So I'm in the middle of that, but I thought that was an interesting thing because, some service providers in an attempt to kind of, provide a high level of care by having all this interdepartmental communication can create barriers for those folks, so for some of the more vulnerable folks with unique disabilities. So with that, I think I've taken up a bunch of time already. I'll open it up for questions or if anybody wants to talk about anything else on the report.
Oh, Stephen, you never have to worry about taking too much time. That's fine. Any questions?
Careful.
No, really. I mean, we'd love to hear them from you. Floor is yours.
He's just saying, be careful what you ask for.
No, not at all. You're always humble, but no, we need to hear these things. I did have a question, Stephen, about the client, the quadriplegic. You may have mentioned this before. Is it the same young lady?
No.
Wow. Really sad situation. I can't, I don't mean to be pitying, but quadriplegic, I can't even imagine the barriers they must face in every single thing they do every day of their lives. So that's So that's just out of your hands now. And it's on between her appointed lawyer and a city lawyer.
Yeah. So what I was able to do, and I think I'm able to do this because it's not a Ryan White Care service provider, but there is an organization here in the city called CANR, that stands for the California Association of Nursing Home Reform. I was able to support the client by making a referral there. I consulted with them first about the process and made sure that it was a warm handoff. I provided documentation and everything to make sure that the client was supported, especially given the challenges that I had, making sure that, appropriate releases were signed. So to my knowledge, that has been effectuated. Richard, to be honest, I love this term. This was used probably one of my first community engagement meetings years ago. And David Gonzalez may have been there, but somebody used the term thirst for narrative, right? Really just appeal to that thirst for narrative, but the story is actually deeper than that. This client hasn't been outside of their house or outside of their four walls since before pandemic. They recently started going to church because it was the only way that they could get out of their, you know, facility. And that happens once a week now. But the client has a significant trauma. In 2020, their longtime partner died. And I don't know that there has been, you know, appropriate access to mental health support or, grief counseling or anything like that. It doesn't appear to be. They have not reported that to me. But there's just a lot going on. And you know, it's an incredibly vulnerable individual. So I feel deeply for them. You know, if I weren't in my role, who knows, you know, where I would go. But yes, to answer your question, that is exactly where we're at. HCAP is no longer able to support in this instance. It's also not the type of case that AORP would take on. In generally speaking, we might be able to refer it to a private attorney, but that would be kind of an uphill battle for us. So the agency that I referred to was the most appropriate referral in this instance.
Steven.
Yeah.
Anyone have anything for Steven? Anything else? Thanks a lot, Steven.
Yeah, thank you all.
Okay, so I think now we were going to do the needs assessment and COLA. That would be up next, okay.
All right, yeah, and I can provide some updates for that. So we did just wrap up the 2022 needs assessment with our recommendations put forth. And so hopefully Mark will be able to touch upon that in the next agenda item if he's able to join us. But now we're just turning our focus to the COLA for this year. And so I just want to remind everyone that our 2023 needs assessment target is Latino, Latina, Latinx. And then as for the COLA, Crown and I will be working hopefully with Steven to start some outreach for that. And then the target for this COLA will be folks facing eviction. And hopefully some other COLAs that we're able to tackle as well is Black as well as youth. And then so the needs assessment target as well as the other two COLA targets, we will be working, as Mark mentioned last month, with membership to hopefully also be able to use those opportunities as recruitment opportunities. And that's all I have to update everyone on. Oh, you're muted, Richard. Oh, you're muted.
I'm sorry. So our COLA is folks facing evictions.
Yes.
And our new needs assessment is Latino, Latina, Latinx.
Yes.
Okay.
Can I get one clarification? Is it folks experiencing eviction, folks facing eviction, folks who have experienced eviction?
So right now it's folks facing eviction, but it's pretty much like an umbrella. So it can really be as specific as this group would like that to be. Or like we can keep it general.
My question to Steven, since you work a lot with folks who have to go through this process or get threatened with this process, is there a big difference in terms of just, I mean, of course there's a big difference, but I mean, in terms of being able to succinctly gather enough data to create a narrative?
Yeah. Most certainly. And I know I offered this as a suggestion, and I know that I have a call scheduled next week with Kira and Crown to kind of chat more about it, but this is probably an appropriate place to bring it up. It will be very difficult. I don't know if you know the eviction process, but it is a very speedy one. Once an eviction is filed, a client has 5 days to answer. And where most lawsuits happen on 30-day timelines, evictions happen in 5-day timelines. It is a challenge even to get clients to our office to meet those 5-day timelines. And somebody who is at that level of insecurity is not likely to engage for any kind of community listening session. That being said, it is I'm in the middle of drafting an email. I was gonna do it before I met with Crown and Kira to talk more, but I could foresee a situation where they come in and I have to enlist the support of our housing attorneys to do this, which is why I need to reach out to my team to see how I can support. Right? We have a lot of confidentiality issues and privacy issues concerned, but and those on top of, you know, on top of your lawyer to maintain those confidences as an attorney. So what the vision that I was trying to create in my head was, how would we appropriately siphon folks to the, you know, session? What I was going to do was suggest to the housing team that they provide, basically at the outset, to either folks who have or who they're taking on as new clients in the process, or folks who have experienced it, who are currently seeking housing and trying to overcome some of the hurdles that any prior eviction may have placed in front of them, because that is a significant barrier once you have an eviction on your credit report. I think, one, the difference, if it's only people facing eviction, we're going to have a lot more trouble. And I can't guarantee that we can get anybody, because this is somebody who's unstably housed is going to be very difficult to kind of, you know, have them prioritize this. But we could offer it as a solution to some other things, right? Show up and this is where you are. There's going to be support for additional services. We can refer you to additional services from there, right? Making it somewhat of a protective factor, or making it seem like a protective factor, might help the clients engage, because at that point, folks are really trying to find housing. What my vision, again, that I have to run by everybody is, you know, can we have a release signed and an information sheet on, say, like, you know, the community is trying to identify and find resources for folks who have experienced eviction. Now that you're in this, right, and we're trying to do everything that we can to fix it, participating in this session could eventually lead to, you know, to some community understanding of what the needs are, and hopefully lead to additional funding down the road. It's not an immediate solve, but while you're there, we can connect you to additional resources. That would be like kind of the ideal kind of way of going about it, I think. Kind of, you know, killing two birds with one stone, so to speak, helping the person and, you know, so I don't know how that sits with everybody, but to answer your question more directly, David, yes, it is. There is going to be a significant disparity between the folks that we get there if they're in the midst of an eviction proceeding, and if we're reaching out to folks who are, you know, not necessarily on the other side of the hump, but like who are kind of dealing with that present, you know, that kind of present barrier.
Okay.
Do you think? Oh, sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Steve.
Oh no, I was just making sure I answered the question.
I'm just curious. Do you think we'll get enough people to make a reasonable? Will we be able to get a reasonable number of people to make, you know, get a better understanding of what's going on and a good representation?
Well, I'm hoping that AORP is not the only provider of folks. You know, I would assume, and maybe it's not a fair assumption, but I would assume that if folks are experiencing houselessness, there is some sort of eviction type. Maybe it wasn't a full on eviction. Maybe it was like an owner kind of just pushed them out or didn't want them there. And, you know, maybe it doesn't have to be the legal term of eviction, right? Maybe it could just be, you know, I mean, and there are other terms for it. The law, we call it constructive eviction, when, you know, when basically an owner makes it so bad to live on their property that you leave. That could also be a part of the discussion. And I would imagine that a lot of the folks who are experiencing houselessness right now have, you know, experienced some form of that. So, I don't think it just has to be AORP. AORP might appear to be the most useful thing, but I also think it's such an acute I mean, it's like trying to do a COLA for somebody, you know, people who have had heart attacks, you know, the day before their surgery, you know, and I just fear one, it could be incredibly activating for folks. And but I think going on the other side of it, if we're working with a client who's experiencing houselessness and we know that they've experienced an eviction, moving them towards the resource. But I'm also hoping that, you know, the other folks, some of the other agencies that know of folks who have gone through this or something like it can weigh in and send some more folks out too.
I just want to add, Stephen, based on what you said, it's going to boil really down to the amount of people that we can get from specific, whether that was people who have experienced eviction or people who are currently experiencing that. But it really just boils down to like who we get. Ideally, we would get folks sharing their experience from both of those. But I mean, like you said, it would be, yeah, I mean, it makes sense. So, but we can, I think once we have that initial discussion, we'll be able to kind of get a better idea of who we'd be targeting. So we can bring that back to this group.
Yeah. And I'm open to, you know, I mean, it could be wider than, you know, I don't know how the process works. I'm unfortunately not very familiar with like how the COLA, if a determination has been made and that we're stuck with that or whether it's still malleable, but I do think that making it broader, you know, in the sense that you're, and I think pointing to the goal, right? The goal is to figure out what do folks who are dealing with, you know, in a broader sense, housing insecurity related to an eviction or, right? What do they need? Like what, how can our community support them? And if that's the goal, then I would say the broader it is, the better, because folks are gonna know, you know, and to that note, right, if there is an eviction, if there has been eviction, it's likely, well, I don't want to say what I think it's likely to be, or the data should drive it, but there's a difference between moving out of your apartment and being evicted from your apartment or pushed out of your apartment, right? And it's different. It feels different from a psychological perspective. It has an effect on your finances and on your credit report in an evident way. And so those are the barriers that a client then has to overcome in addition to the existing housing crisis. And so figuring out what is needed to overcome those additional barriers is, I think, what the goal of the COLA should be. Given what the, you know, our discussion. And so I think the broadest category to capture those two things that we can think of. Did that even make sense? What I was talking, I'm improvising right now, y'all. I'm sorry. I'm like, this is totally stream of conscious.
Yeah. I just see it's going to be, it sounds like you guys, it's going to be challenging, really challenging.
Well, as Kira said, it sounds like you guys have something set up between the three of you. You're going to meet outside of this group, and then you'll bring something back formative and concrete the next time we meet.
Happy.
Cool.
Yeah, and if you all need us to make some hard decisions, let us know too. You know, I mean, if it's not going to be feasible within the time frame, and we need to expend time, or maybe sort of shift the subject matter a little bit, just let us know. I mean, we since the pandemic started, it's been a lot really challenging trying to get some of these COLAs and these assessments done, and so like we're cognizant of that. So I want to make sure that y'all just don't feel super flustered if it gets very challenging to have any kind of engagement or get enough numbers. It's more about like, yeah, let us know. You know, we understand that this is why I was asking Stephen, because I'm like, it just seems like a lot. And so I want to make sure that we give you all that kind of space to actually develop something you can do within the set time frame.
Good point, David. Thank you. Okay, so thanks everyone. We're caught up on that. So, Kira, what do you want to do about trans need assessment recommendation?
I was trying to see if maybe Mark would let me know if he'd be able to get out of that other meeting, but I don't see anything. So if it's okay with everyone, I would just like to suggest we move this agenda item over to next month's community engagement meeting. So that way we can discuss it when Mark is here.
Sounds good.
Okay. Yeah. All right, other than that, that looks like the agenda for today.
Record time. You do such a good job, Richard.
Well, I mean, this has been pretty smooth. This is a fast moving group. Unless something comes up, it's pretty hammer and nail. Thank you. So how about we are looking forward to the next meeting, June 7th. Same time, same station.
Okay.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you all.
Actually, Stephen, could you stay on?
Happily, yeah.
Just have a quick question.
Sure.
Ooh, is it okay if I stay on?
Yeah, totally.
I think I invited?
I think you have to. I was like, just waiting for Kira to leave. No. Oh, we can also, we should stop the recording. what was I going to ask?